Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. Our topic for the hour tonight is San Francisco's Department of the Environment. San Francisco was crowned the greenest city in the United States and Canada last year in a large study conducted by the Economist Intelligence Unit. And just this month, it reached an 80% landfill diversion rate, setting North American recycling and composting records. It's now implementing the most restrictive checkout bag rules in the nation, and it's establishing new programs around toxics, energy use, green building, and transportation. By these and other measures, San Francisco appears to be on track to become a sustainable city. But what does true sustainability mean, and how much can one city accomplish, especially in the face of potentially catastrophic global threats such as climate change? In this hour and in our occasional series, Government from the Inside, we'll explore the policies, practices, and philosophies of San Francisco's Department of the Environment with the department's head, Melanie Nutter. What new measures, incentives, and rules can we expect to see in our city as we work towards sustainability? How can city policy go regional or even national? And what does it take to change people's behaviors? Our guest tonight, as I mentioned, is Melanie Nutter. She's the director of the San Francisco Department of the Environment. And before that, she joined that department in 2010. And before that, she was deputy district director for House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She also founded and chaired the Energy and Environment Circle for the Full Circle Fund and was a grassroots political organizer with the Greenbelt Alliance, the Public Interest Research Group, and Green Corps. Welcome, Melanie Nutter, to the program.
Thank you very much.
And for those of you listening at home, or on the web, wherever you may be, you're welcome to call in with your questions and comments. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes, and our number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can also email us now at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our webpage, and you can just go to the klw.org website and search for City Visions under Programs. So, Melanie Nutter, what does it mean to you to be a sustainable city or to aim to be a sustainable city?
So, excuse me, here in San Francisco, the Department of the Environment is the city agency that is predominantly responsible for many of our sustainability programs. That's ranging from reaching zero waste to implementing renewable energy programs to rolling out our electric vehicle infrastructure. So when we look at being a sustainable city, it really touches a number of different sectors. Again, whether it's the transportation sector or the built environment, and we run many of those programs as a city agency.
And so when people talk about sustainability, what kinds of markers and measures do they use to grade how a particular area is doing?
Well, some of the most popular markers and measures for judging whether a city is truly sustainable, first and foremost, is around carbon emissions. And in the city and county of San Francisco, we have some aggressive carbon emission reduction goals that were set by the mayor and the Board of Supervisors. One of them is to reach a reduction of carbon emissions by 20% below 1990 levels by the end of this year, and then we have a number of goals leading all the way up to 2050. And in the city and county of San Francisco, we have already reduced our carbon emissions by 14.5%, which is double the Kyoto Protocol. So that is one of the measures and markers that entities like Siemens and the Economist Intelligence Unit that looked at us as a green city were looking at to judge how we're doing.
And if you look at the list, who came behind San Francisco as the next greenest city?
The next greenest city was actually our neighbor to the north, was Vancouver. They were number two, and the other U.S. city that was right up there was New York City, is also doing great in that report.
Great. And how far behind us are they?
Well, it's interesting that you ask. I just saw the mayor of Vancouver speak at a conference this week, and it was very much like listening to our mayor talk about all of the green initiatives and why we want to be the greenest city in the U.S. We have or in North America, we have a healthy competition with Vancouver and other cities. But in Vancouver, for instance, they have reduced their carbon emissions by 6% and are working to achieve zero waste, and they want to reduce their waste by about 50% by 2020. So each city has different metrics and measures, but Vancouver is doing great, and we look to them as a partner, as a green city as well.
And so how is it that San Francisco is doing as well as it is?
So particularly when it comes to carbon emissions, there's a few factors that have contributed to the reduction of to get to 14.5%. One is that we decommissioned two coal-fired power plants that were in the city and county boundaries in the past decade. So that has had an impact. Also, our electricity supply has gotten much cleaner over the past decade. So Pacific Gas and Electric, who, of course, provides our electricity to the city, has a much cleaner mix. And so there is renewable energy that is now part of what San Francisco residents and businesses are getting. And then finally, we, on the municipal side, do get quite a bit of electricity, or actually all of our electricity, from Hetch Hetchy, which is our hydroelectric power plant. And that is greenhouse gas emissions free power. One other key program for the city and county of San Francisco is our zero waste program. And it's something that we are looked to from cities around the U.S. and the world as a leader in. We set a goal of wanting to achieve zero waste by 2020, meaning that no waste would be going to the landfill. All of it would either be recycled, composted, or reused. And we just announced last week that we have achieved as a city an 80% reduction in the amount of waste that is going to the landfill, or an 80% diversion rate. So that is another key metric and measure that we're looked at when we look at how we're doing on as a sustainable city.
So we talked about goals that you're setting to decrease our CO2 emissions by certain amounts compared to where we were at a certain time in the past. So, but where did San Francisco start? When you sort of look at absolute pollution or absolute environmental health of the city, did San Francisco start with at an advantage compared to other cities, and so we can do so much better because we're kind of started as a healthier city? Or did we just have we reduced a lot, and we started at a place where we're much more comparable to other cities? Or because, for example, the thought that's been crossing my mind is that we don't have manufacturing or other kinds of industries here to kind of have to rein in. So did we just start at a much healthier place to begin with, or did we really go as far as you're suggesting?
Well, when we're looking at reducing carbon emissions by 14.5%, that is it's in comparison to San Francisco's baseline. Mm-hmm. And so we have, like many cities, we've used the 1990 energy baseline to judge how we have reduced our carbon emissions. So that is the benchmark that we judge against. In the city and county of San Francisco, though, similar to other cities, there really are a few key sectors where a majority of our carbon emission comes from. And in San Francisco, that is transportation, the built environment, and the waste sector. And so when we put together our climate action strategy and chart out a course for where we've been and where we're headed, we really look at specific actions, policies, and programs in those three key areas to ensure we can keep making progress.
Okay. So let's delve into a little bit more of these drivers, these major areas of impact that you're trying to make, one at a time. So why don't we talk about them in their order of contribution to pollution and waste. So how do you mentioned three there. There's transportation, built environment, and the waste sectors. Is that the order in which you target them?
It is. and that's actually, in terms of contribution, the largest. So
right.
The built environment comprises about 56% of the carbon emissions in the city and county of San Francisco. So a couple programs and policies that my department is working on specifically to tackle carbon emissions in that area. A new ordinance called the Existing Commercial Building Ordinance was passed about 2 years ago by the Mayor and Board of Supervisors. And what that ordinance requires is that all commercial buildings 10,000 square feet and over in the city and county of San Francisco are required to provide energy use data to the city, with the idea that disclosing that information and having an open dialogue with property owners about their energy use, that we could both chart a course for them to reduce their energy use, to have the environmental benefit, as well as help them save money on their energy bills. So we're in the process of implementing that, and we have had great support in terms of working with other stakeholders and coalition partners, particularly BOMA and a number of other entities that work in the commercial building sector, to ensure that we can get the data to help commercial building owners reduce their energy use. So that's one area that we're focused on in the built environment.
And then you said transportation. Where is that? Does that come in second in terms of contributions?
That comes in second.
Okay.
And particularly cars and trucks. So it's about around 40%. Is the carbon emissions are coming from cars and trucks currently. So a couple of programs that my department works on to help reduce carbon emissions is we're the agency that's responsible for rolling out the electric vehicle infrastructure in San Francisco. And I'm sure you've heard Mayor Lee speak about this issue. He's very passionate about electric vehicles as an alternative to fossil fuel powered cars. So my department is working with other city agencies as well as private entities to roll out a infrastructure so that individuals who still do need to rely on a single occupancy vehicle can access an infrastructure for a EV. And right now we have about 50 charging stations that we've implemented over the past year and a half, and we'll have about 80 by the end of the year, again, all to enable residents who want an EV in the city and county of San Francisco as an alternative and a clean car.
So I imagine, though, that a lot of the pollution that comes into the city from cars and trucks are cars and trucks that you can't control in some way, right? They're passing through here on some on the highway or on their way someplace else. How do you impact that piece of it as opposed to trying to impact just what people drive here in the city, or even how much they drive, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually where regional partnerships do come into play and are really critical. On the electric vehicle infrastructure piece, we're working with the Bay Area Climate Collaborative throughout the Bay Area to roll out an electric vehicle infrastructure that doesn't just start and stop with the city boundaries. So we work with San Jose, we're working with Oakland, with a number of other cities to ensure that whether you're crossing the city boundary, crossing a bridge, you can still have access to an electric vehicle infrastructure. And the same is true for the public transit system. Although that's not within our jurisdiction, we do work very closely with the MTA around making sure that people have excellent public transportation options to help them get out of their cars as well.
And then you mentioned waste was the third area. Now, you said 56% for built environment. Transport was 40%. So is waste only about 4%?
Waste is only about 4%.
Huh.
Exactly. So it's a smaller portion when it comes to carbon emissions, but it's a really critical component for our city. As I said, we have really led the way in ensuring that we can divert waste from our landfill. And
so why put so much effort into that if it's only contributing the 4%?
Well, because our climate program is really one element of sustainability. Being a less wasteful city is also another critical component. So although climate is an umbrella through which we can look at a lot of the work that we do, there's many other programs that we run that have just as much critical importance. And being a less wasteful city, finding the highest and best use for materials is another critical component of what we do.
And so tell us more a little bit about how you're moving so quickly toward near 80% landfill diversion rate. What has made this so successful?
So in the area of zero waste, we have about a 30-year history in the city and county of San Francisco of leading the way on recycling. And it started 30 years ago where we had neighborhood and community recycling centers that started up from a grassroots movement to be less wasteful and to not to really get away from the consumer throwaway society. And once the bottle bill was passed in California a couple of decades ago, that also gave additional oomph and impetus to increase recycling at the local level. So over the past decade, our leadership, both the board and the mayor, have really focused on setting some ambitious goals to help us reach zero waste by 2020. And a couple of key policies have really helped us go from about a 35% recycling rate now to or diversion rate to 80%. And those key policies include: we do now have mandatory composting and recycling in the city and county of San Francisco. So we were one of the first cities to pass that ordinance and say service for recycling and composting is required. So that was the first component. The second policy is we passed a construction and demolition ordinance that requires that all construction sites divert 65% of their waste or more. And that has had a huge impact on the amount of waste that we're sending to the landfill. So those two policies alone have had a huge impact. A couple of other key components to running a successful zero waste program. We have a private sector partner, Recology, that has embraced this idea of zero waste. They call themselves a zero waste company. So they help us run a very easy-to-use program where there's the green bin for compost, the blue bin for recycling, and the black bin for landfill. And no matter where you go in San Francisco, if you're at someone's home, at a business, it's the same exact program. So it's very easy to understand and easy to use. And then a last very critical component for us reaching zero waste is outreach and education. Yeah. We invest a lot of time at Department of the Environment in raising awareness about zero waste and about how to achieve that goal. So talking with individual residents, individual businesses about where their waste goes and how to help us meet that goal.
Hmm. And so there's still quite a bit that's going to the Altamont landfill. How much actually goes there per year?
There is still 444,000 tons that are going to the landfill still.
Wow. And so that's even, that's that 20%.
That's the 20%. Exactly.
So that seems like a lot to still work on. What's it going to take to get there? And so tell me what the components are in that 20%. Is it that there's the 20% of current refuse that is just not recyclable and compostable? Is it that people aren't completely following the regulations of composting and recycling? What are the factors that are going to make up that 20% and getting us to that goal of zero waste?
Great question. So our most recent waste study looking at what was still going to the landfill showed that a third of what's still going is recyclable. A third of what is still going to the landfill is compostable. So we do know that there's more that we could do in terms of compliance, getting the right materials in the right bin. And that's really what we focus a lot on for the outreach and education. The last third are really problem products in our waste stream that there's no good use for them now. They can't be recycled, whether it's thin film plastic, there's some ceramics, there's certain types of furniture that can't be reused the way that it's coated. So part of what we do is work with companies that make those products to see if there is an alternative where they could have, there's something to do with them at the end of their life. And so that's called producer responsibility. And some of the policies and programs that we have run and will run in the future are focused on making sure that those products are not made in the first place and don't end up in our waste stream.
Hmm. And this, I think, is a question that's been lingering in my mind is, you know, San Francisco, a sizable city, but not the biggest city in the world. How can San Francisco influence things like what kinds of products manufacturers use to wrap or prepare or, you know, package their goods? How much influence can one city have? And we'll probably turn to this recurring theme as we talk more through the hour. But how can one city impact what a manufacturing sector does, mm-hmm. if that's kind of where you're kind of left at the end of the day?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great question. And I would say from a big picture perspective, cities realize that they're no longer working in silos to achieve sustainability. I would say over the past 5 years, there's really been a trend towards cities working together, not necessarily in a competitive fashion, but in a collaborative fashion to share best practices and policies of what works, because we all are facing similar challenges and know that we could accelerate progress towards sustainability by working together. So there's a few key networks that exist. One of them is in North America. It's called the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, and it's a coalition of, it's a networking group of sustainability directors at small cities, medium-sized cities, and major cities that get together once a year and really talk about what's working and collaborating to accelerate that progress. There's also the C40 network, which is a similar network that operates internationally. It was set up by Mayor Bloomberg in New York City. And that is another venue for cities to share what's working and what isn't at the local level to accelerate progress. And when you look at internationally where carbon emissions are coming from, 70% of carbon emissions are currently coming from cities, and that's going to increase over time. So we know that if we can impact what's happening at the local level in cities throughout the world, we can make huge amounts of change. When it comes to manufacturing, we really look at trying to have pilot programs at the local level to see what is working and what can work so that a manufacturer, for instance, could say, well, in this particular community, this is what they requested. It's probably going to happen in many other cities. So would we make a company policy or a national policy to replicate that to be a more sustainable company? So so cities really can have a local impact.
And are there things that you can do to incentivize companies along this process as a city? Or are you just kind of hoping that you're going to make a strong enough case and you're going to get your partners around the country to kind of follow suit and to kind of put sort of pressure? Like, what's the stance that you take in these situations? Is it kind of a pressure stance? Is it kind of come along with us on the good fight here? How do you get groups, manufacturers, other sectors to come along?
So it really depends on the issue. And we currently have a pilot program that's running in San Francisco around collecting pharmaceuticals. And this is an issue that for a period of time was being looked at by our board of supervisors. And one of the supervisors was thinking about mandating having a program where the pharmaceutical industry would be required to pay for that particular program. And what ended up happening instead was a number of pharmaceutical companies, once that conversation got started, came to the table and said, we want a solution to this too. And we want to be a collaborator with the city and county of San Francisco to find a way to set up a program that both works for us as industry and works for the city to get pharmaceuticals out of the water supply and out of the landfill. So what we ended up doing is getting funding from a couple of industry groups that said they would help support setting up a take-back program. And it just has launched. We've collected about 3 tons of pharmaceuticals in the past few months since it launched. And that's one path around working with industry. There are other models where we would actually require some sort of fee or some mandate to work with a company in terms of taking their waste back. But it really depends on the issue.
If you're just joining us, this is City Visions on 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at kalw.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're speaking with the head of San Francisco's Department of the Environment, Melanie Nutter. We're opening our phone lines to you now with your questions and comments on how San Francisco is doing towards its goal to be or to continue to be the most sustainable city in North America. You can call at 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. You can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our website. Just go to klw.org and search for City Visions under Programs. So I wanted to ask you the other part of that 20%, right? We talked about it was a third of the products that just can't be recycled or compostable, but it's about two-thirds that are incorrectly being thrown into the waste bin as opposed to recycled or composted. What muscle or power do you have to get the citizens and others in San Francisco to recycle and compost right?
Well, I would say before we exercise muscle, we go to outreach and education. That's our first muscle that we exercise. We do a lot of tabling at community events. So we have a cadre of volunteers that are experts in where waste should be put in the blue bin or the green bin. And so we spend a lot of time out in the community talking with residents and businesses about where recycling and composting goes. Secondly, we also do cart monitoring. And this is something that we have worked with our Environment Now program, which is actually a workforce development program that the Department of the Environment runs. And individuals from the Environment Now program will go out into communities throughout the city and look in their bins to Wow. see what residents and what businesses are doing well and which ones could use a little help in learning where their waste goes. So we will actually tag carts and give people information and say, we saw that some of your food scraps ended up in the black bin. Those actually go in the green. That has been very effective because, again, residents and businesses know the city cares, There's solutions. We can provide information. We've really seen changes in communities when we provide the information about where the materials go.
And is there a time when this will turn into fines? Because I happen to know in New York City, they're pretty aggressive about fining people for not recycling.
The mandatory composting and recycling law does give the Department of the Environment the ability to fine. Again, we haven't wanted to leverage that unless absolutely necessary. There may be a time in the future where we do levy fines for either businesses or residents that repeatedly don't comply.
Okay. So 415-841-4134. Looks like all of our phone lines are currently full, but keep trying. Let's go to our first caller, William from Belvedere. Welcome to the program. And
thank you very much.
Yes.
I'd appreciate the guest's comments. Whether when she speaks of the percentage of diversion, whether they're speaking of volume or of weight, that was the first thing. Because, you know, a styrofoam can fill up a whole lot of stuff, mm-hmm. but it doesn't weigh anything. The other thing is, for construction, where 60% of what's left over from construction has to be diverted, so much of that is concrete and painted boards and broken up rocks and stuff like that. I don't understand how that can be diverted. And the last thing, that this is just an observation, here in Belvedere, and in Marin County in general, they do now have us put those of us who don't compost ourselves, to put our food waste in the green can. The problem with that is that, whereas before the green can, when it just had clippings, could be picked up every 2 weeks, now it has to be picked up every week because there's a requirement that if food garbage is in things, it can't be in there for more than a week. And therefore, in our situation where they come to pick up with different trucks for each of the cans, it doubles the number of trips to the dump and therefore does have a certain polluting effect.
That's an interesting observation. Well, thanks so much, William, for your call.
Thank you.
Okay, so Melanie.
Thank you for your call, William. In response to your first question, it is by weight, so it's by tonnage, is how we track the diversion. On construction and demolition, Recology, our private sector partner, does operate a facility where many of the materials that do come from construction sites are able to be reused. Some of the concrete, a lot of the board is not painted and can be sorted and reused and reclaimed. So there is a whole process at the Recology Tunnel Road site where they are able to reuse a lot of the construction and demolition materials. And then regarding the food waste, we do have a weekly pickup, both for the green and for the black bin. And in San Francisco, we're able to turn that waste into certified organic compost that can then go back to the agricultural areas in the Bay Area. So that's generally how we do it in San Francisco.
Do you happen to know what fuel drives the Recology trucks?
It is, it's biodiesel.
Okay. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment on our website at klw.org/program/city-visions as we talk with the head of the Department of the Environment here in San Francisco. I'm Joseph Pache, and you're listening to City Visions. 415-841-4134. Let's go to our next caller, Karen from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening. I'm so happy to hear of all of these successes, and I know it's been a lot of work to get to this point. And I just had a thought. If your organization could contact the local news stations, ABC, CBS, NBC, Channel 7, whatever it is, and ask them if they'll put on a half a minute public service announcement and show the different cans. These are the cans. This is the color. This is what you put in there. Just to alert and educate people or new arrivals or people that don't speak English to what goes in there, just as a little public service announcement. And maybe they would be gracious enough and generous enough to accommodate that to help San Francisco continue on its path of becoming a really clean city.
Great. Thanks so much for your call, Karen.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
So how is the media helping here? present company excluded.
This is a good first step, or an additional step to much of what we've done. But Karen, thank you for your call and for your suggestion. We did use TV right when the mandatory composting and recycling law was put into place a couple of years ago, and haven't done as much TV recently. So I think that is something that we have in our plan for next year. A lot of what we've done is earned media. So press conferences, press releases, when we have new announcements, or when there's a certain element that we want to promote in relation to the Zero Waste campaign. We also have started using a lot of social media. So we've done a lot through Twitter and Facebook and accessing a new segment of supporters for Department of the Environment. And we do rely a lot, as I mentioned, on grassroots and community work of being out in the community, presenting to groups, presenting to residents and businesses throughout the San Francisco area one-on-one.
And how about schools? Are you in the schools?
We are in the schools. Yes, we do have a fantastic Green Schools program that's run out of Department of the Environment, where we actually send assistant teachers into the classroom and teach them about composting and also about conserving water. So we have a whole curriculum that we work with many of the schools in the San Francisco Bay Area to educate our young people about the work that we're doing.
Excellent. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com, or you can post a comment at klw.org/program/city-visions. And let's go next to, I believe it's Joan from San Francisco. Yeah, Joan, welcome to the program.
I'm Joe.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Which is fine. You know, I'm really good about putting my cans and bottles in the recycling. I think I'm good about it. And I'm good about composting. But when I have food that comes in a plastic container, I get confused. And I'm never sure what I should be doing with it.
All right. Can you tell us a little bit more about what confuses you?
What do I do with this? I know plastic is not recyclable. Am I not right?
Harder plastic is recyclable. So if it's a thin film plastic, that is not recyclable. But you don't have to look at the triangles on the bottom of plastics anymore. San Francisco's program does take all harder plastics.
All hard plastics.
Yes, so you can put that in the blue bin.
And the plastic bags, I can put them all in. There's usually some place that I can put them at some store.
So plastic bags, there are a couple of stores that will take them back for recycling.
Right. I know a couple, like that Kohl's, Kohl Hardware near me, they have a container for us to put soft plastic into.
Exactly.
Yes, that answers my question.
Okay, well, great.
I just dropped the hard plastic in with the rest of recyclable.
Right. So the hard plastic goes in recyclable and the food that's in the plastic goes in the compost.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. Thanks so much, Joe, for your call.
Thank you.
So that is, you know, a sign that, you know, people are really interested, and yet it can be a little confusing.
It can be.
For example, I'll ask you a question that I have, which is, okay, I go and get a takeout for lunch and it's in a plastic container, which I should be able to recycle. But, you know, there's a little oil and a little grease mixed into the salad that I'm getting or whatever it is that I'm getting. How clean does that plastic container have to be before I put it in the recycling bin after I finished eating it? And if I had the choice, you know, someone suggested, well, why don't you just clean it out with a napkin? Well, that's kind of like, you know, not that. It's kind of messy to do that. So I don't want to rinse it out with water because I feel like I'm wasting a lot of water to rinse something out. But anyway, how clean does the plastic have to be before it goes in the recycling container?
As clean as possible. So I think the person who made the suggestion of using your napkin and wiping it out a little bit, you can put that in the compost and then put that in the recycling bin. But ideally, it's better, even if it's got a little bit of food waste, to put it in the recycling. Better to try to clean it, but if you can't, put it in the recycling anyway.
Then put it in the trash.
Yes.
Okay, because I don't want it to, like, contaminate the system or do so. Yeah, so the question I have, is the follow-up to that is, how much sort of sort of appropriation of waste happens that then sort of gums up the works. So what if something gets put in the wrong bin? You know, if a recycling product gets put in the compost or compost gets put in recycling, how much does that affect the process? And can people undo some of the good by putting things in the wrong place? We talked about obviously putting the stuff in the waste bin that shouldn't be there, but how about if they mix things inappropriately. Mm-hmm. What, how much give is in there in the system to kind of be able to correct for that?
Mm-hmm. So Recology operates at Pier 96, what we call Recycle Central. So that's where all of the household recycling and commercial recycling is taken to be sorted and then sorted into 19 different commodities that can be sold either locally or internationally to be reused. At Pier 96, there are workers that work on a line. So there's some automatic sorting, and then there also are individuals who are looking for contamination in the waste stream. Some of it is able to be handled both by machinery as well as by the workers at the Pier 96 plant. But obviously, the less contamination, the better, because then it is a more valuable commodity. So that's why we say recyclables in the blue, compost in the bin, in the green bin, and anything else in the black.
Okay. Well, that's great. Let's go to our next caller, Anthony from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Good evening. Thank you. It's an interesting program. I'm an amateur astronomer and really concerned about nighttime light pollution, but science is also finding out a lot about the negative human health effects and the negative effects on wildlife and plants of nighttime light pollution. I'm wondering, is the city measuring nighttime light pollution and doing anything to reduce it?
Okay. Thanks so much, Anthony, for your call.
Thank you for your call. I'm not aware of the city doing anything on nighttime pollution, but if you do have any information to send us, you could send it to an email, which is environment@sfenvironment.org, and we'd be happy to look at what you found out about nighttime pollution. Again, the email is environment@sfenvironment.org.
And we'll make sure to put a link on our website, klw.org/program/city-visions. Yeah, that was an area that I hadn't heard about before. And then speaking of which, well, then if it's light pollution, how about noise pollution? Is that something that's being looked upon in terms of, I guess it's more of like not necessarily the climate change and the carbon emissions, but sort of for quality of life measure. Is that something that your department has looked into?
That's not something that's in the jurisdiction of our department, but it's certainly that the city does deal with, oftentimes through 311. I know if there are noise pollution or noise concerns, those often go to the 311 line.
Okay. 415-841-4134 or feedback@cityvisionsradio.com to join our conversation with the head of San Francisco's Department of the Environment. We'll take a couple more calls in just a moment, but, you know, Joe's call reminded me about, she talked about the plastic bags. And, of course, just this month, San Francisco expanded its plastic bag ban, if I could call it that, and wanted to hear a little bit from you about 15 days or so into it. What's the buzz that you're hearing at your department? Is there a lot of complaints? Is there confusion? What are people saying? And maybe for those who may not know, can you just give us a little capsule summary of where things stand currently?
Uh-huh. So a couple of years ago, an ordinance was passed in San Francisco to ban the use of plastic bags, particularly at grocery stores and at pharmacies. And earlier this year, working with the Board of Supervisors and the mayor, we passed an expanded plastic bag ordinance that now applies as of October 1st to all retail establishments in San Francisco. So plastic bags are now not allowed to be sold or used in San Francisco.
How about the compostable plastic bags?
So now what's allowable under the ordinance is either paper bags, compostable bags, or, of course, reusable bags. In the case of a paper bag or a compostable bag, there is now a 10-cent charge on those bags. So for any single-use bag that's allowable, there's a 10-cent charge.
And who does the 10 cents go to?
The 10 cents goes to the small business. So whichever business is distributing those bags, they get to keep it to help with the transition to compostable or paper if they had plastic before. So 15 days into it, it's been great. We have a fantastic outreach team that has just done an excellent job over the past 6 months helping to raise awareness in the small business community, in a number of different neighborhoods about this transition. So we've done a lot of outreach and education and have had five bag fairs that we held with the small business community community, helping them understand what was allowable under the ordinance and what they needed to transition from. And we also are in the midst of giving away 17,000 reusable bags, again, to help individuals make the transition and have access to a reusable bag that they could take to an establishment. So we are doing about 50 bag giveaway events over the next few weeks, and it's been going great. And it's really interesting to go into, whether it's a grocery store, any kind of store, and hear any, you know, the cash register person say, well, I can give this to you, but it's a 10-cent charge. And I say, oh, my department, actually, we're the ones that did that. So I brought my own reusable bag. I don't need to pay the 10 cents. But anyway, it's gone really well. And we've gotten questions, it's gone really well.
415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Marie Louise from Palo Alto. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I almost want to say entirely different things now than I spoke to the person at the controls. But anyway, I'm very glad to hear about the charge for bags, and I think that will make things change. That does bring me to one little thought. I tried to have that happen in the area where I live years ago, because I found it to be happening in Sweden probably. It's probably about 25 years ago or so they started it there. And I just think it makes a huge difference. So that's one thing that I'm adding now. But I also wanted to say I'm hoping that we can use clever people that can come up with really clever sayings so that we can have signs. I live in an apartment building in Palo Alto, and it is astounding what is thrown into the large, we have a kind of a container for our garbage. And then we have all the recycling bins, which works to some degree. But anything from clothes, printers, computers, lamps, just unbelievable what goes into the garbage. And many things are in very good condition. If one opens up the garbage container, one can see, you know, comforters or whatever is thrown in. Anyway, so I'm just wanting to encourage people to go to the huge trouble of letting things be used again, because, you know, so many of these things I see there could very well be used again. So I want encouragement.
I believe there is a mantra, right? It's reduce, reuse, recycle, right?
You got it right.
And we've been talking mostly with the third part there, but so I don't know. How does that sound, Marie Louise? I didn't make that up, by the way.
I don't think people care. So I want more than that in some interesting way. I want it to be more than that, that they actually will have a little jolt in their mind.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
So how about that electronic waste and other things that people just kind of say, what do I do with this?
Mm-hmm. Reuse is a critical component, and recycling and composting is one piece of waste diversion, but reuse is another critical component. When it comes to things like electronic waste or other materials, of course, there are entities like Goodwill that, it's very interesting that an entity like Goodwill has really rebranded themselves as an environmental nonprofit, because they are set up to take so much out of what could be going to the landfill and putting it back in circulation. So there's a lot of great options, and some of them are right before our eyes and may not even think about. So certainly entities like Goodwill that make it their business model to reuse materials. And also Recology has, at the Tunnel Road facility, you can take back paint, computers, mattresses, many materials that you don't want to send to landfill, but are challenging to handle. Recology will take those at the Tunnel Road site.
Is there a place where people can go to find out where, besides Goodwill, where else they can go for, you know, these electronic recycling days or other things? Because oftentimes I've found myself in a situation, say, like having a little pile of things that I want to deal with, but I just don't know where and when I can bring those things in. So is there a central place?
So One recommendation that I would have is to call Recology. They will also do a free pickup within the city and county of San Francisco of larger bulky items. So that would be one suggestion. I will also tell listeners, and the listeners will be some of the first to know, that we're going to be launching a new website very soon called RecycleWare, and it's going to be a resource for how you get rid of anything and how you dispose of anything properly. So it is not launched yet, but it will be launched in the coming weeks. And so please keep your eye on Department of the Environment's website for more information on that, which is sfenvironment.org.
You heard it here first. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go next to Harvey from Oakland. Welcome to the program. Harvey, we're getting you on the line in just a moment. Hey, Harvey.
Okay, are you hearing me now?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, my question is for compostables like banana peels and stuff, what's about using the compostable bin versus using the garbage disposal?
That is a very good question. We tend to want to use the green bin because we can then turn that compost into, we can turn that waste into organic compost for reuse. If you have a garbage disposal and you want to use that garbage disposal for various reasons, maybe you can't take your compost bin out for a couple of days and so you need to have an option to dispose of that properly, that is one option. But we do prefer the green bin because of, again, highest and best use of that waste is to turn it back into organic compost that can be used in agriculture.
Yeah, because the problem is, with compostable, if you keep it around the house for several days, it can start to get smelly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also, it's easy when you have food waste on a plate, you just rinse the plate into the sink and use the disposal. When I'm in San Francisco at a place where I have a garbage disposal, the stem end of the banana, tends to clog the garbage disposal, so I peel that off and put that in the compost bin, and then the rest of the banana is peeled, for instance. Hard stuff like avocado pits can't go into, obviously, the garbage disposal. But when it goes to the sewage plant, can't they process that like into biosolids and use that as fertilizer?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not completely, doing bad by doing the garbage disposal compared to composting, but it sounds like the yield is better out of compost.
That's right.
All right, thanks so much, Harvey. Go ahead.
In Oakland, I don't have a garbage disposal, so I cut the banana peels into little pieces and then flush it down the toilet when I need to use the toilet. Does that in any way clog up the sewage plant?
That won't clog up the sewage plants, I don't believe. No.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Harvey. I just wonder if all of these efforts of yours are creating more and more fights about take the garbage out. It's your turn to take the garbage out. It's getting smelly. Or maybe there won't be fights over the garbage to be taken out because it's getting smelly. 415-841-4134 or feedback at cityvisionsradio.com. Let's go to Steve from San Francisco. Steve, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. This is a 50-year observation. I'm wondering about the stationary trash cans that are on the streets. I've noticed that there seems to be quite a few people going into them, and they have large plastic bags. They've loaded up all the cans, all the bottles, all the plastics. They've taken them out of the city receptacles. And then also when we put our bins out, we have people 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning or whatever, going through them and rifling out the plastics, the bottles, and the cans for recycling. I'm wondering if this is a violation of the county's penal codes, there is one established.
Okay. Thanks so much for your call. What do you think, Melanie?
I don't know if it is a violation of the penal code. I will say in regards to the stationary trash cans that are throughout the downtown area, you may have seen that a number of them have what we call a pyramid top. And that actually is meant to support casual recycling because of the bottle bill, because, of course, bottles and cans do have a value under the bottle bill. So some of those cans are designed for individuals to be able to reclaim those materials. That's the way those bins are. As it comes to individuals that are taking materials out of your bin, I would again recommend emailing our department at environment@sfenvironment.org, and we can help you figure out what to do in that situation.
Okay, we have an email here from Peter saying he'd like to ask Melanie what San Francisco's per capita, now I don't know if this is a typo, GHG emissions are compared to other cities like New York City and Vancouver. Does that mean something to you?
The per capita greenhouse gas emission reductions.
There we go, of course. Sorry.
yes, and I don't actually have those off the top of my head, but I'd be happy to get back to Peter.
Okay, great. Let's go next to Annie from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much. This is a really inspiring show, and kudos to the San Francisco Department of the Environment for being a model for the nation on so many fronts, especially on zero waste. I'm calling to ask about a particular concern I have around a threat to zero waste that's popping up across the country, which is the resurgence of garbage incinerators, you know, these big monstrosities that burn garbage, often called now waste-to-energy plants to try to make them sound good. And as I'm sure you know, they waste resources, they're bad for community health, they're bad for the environment, they're bad for the climate, and ironically or tragically, both of the other two cities you mentioned as most sustainable cities, Vancouver and New York City, are both actively considering garbage incinerators. And so I wondered, has San Francisco been approached by one of these garbage incinerator pushers, and do you have a position on garbage incineration?
Thanks for the call, Anne. Excuse me. Yes, we do have a position on that. Department of the Environment does not support incineration when it comes to handling our waste. So that's one of the reasons why we do think it is so important for us to share the story of how zero waste, how we have gotten as close to zero waste as we have with cities around the U.S. as around the world, because we have done it without incineration. And, you know, many of the concerns that you just mentioned, our department shares around incineration. So we have taken a position that we don't support incineration as a way to handle waste. And again, you know, like to share our story with other cities about how to get great diversion rates without that as an option.
Okay, let's go next to Ted from San Francisco. Welcome to the program. Ted, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Hey, thanks for putting on this program. It's great. And I don't want to be negative, but I have a comment about our garbage pickup over the last 10 years. I've been on Little Red Street. And garbage used to be...
Sorry, Ted, you're breaking up there.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Are you there?
Yes, we can hear you. Yeah, go ahead.
The way the garbage used to be picked up would be one truck would come by with three or four people on the truck, and they would pretty much do the block in about 5 minutes. Now the mode, which I'm not sure is citywide, is one truck with one person on it who drives and picks up all the garbage. So my question is, has anybody looked at the environmental impact? And we definitely have more pollution on our block. When the garbage trucks come by, they take at least a half an hour to get through this block. So I wonder if that's an equation anybody's looking at.
Okay, thanks so much for your call.
Thanks.
So are you aware of this change in the staffing of the trucks?
I'm not aware of exactly what changes were made as it relates to the staffing of the trucks. I do know that Recology looks very closely at efficiencies when they're picking up, when they're putting together their routes throughout the city and county of San Francisco. So, and I also know that they have made a very big push towards cleaner fuels and cleaner vehicles to ensure that the carbon emission impact is reduced. So, so to find out more information, I would definitely contact Recology directly, but that is a sensitivity that they have around both efficiencies and keeping carbon emissions low when picking up our trash.
Okay, great. We have an email from Denise in San Francisco that says, what is the department doing to eliminate styrofoam packing material, especially in city government? And I'm not sure what she's referring to there about city government and styrofoam, but...
So we actually already have a ban on styrofoam. We were one of the first cities to implement a ban on styrofoam, and that's really looking at dealing with those problem products in our waste stream. So we, a couple of years ago, spent an entire year getting rid of styrofoam at restaurants and many different establishments, as well as throughout our municipal operations. So if there's a particular incident that she knows of where styrofoam is still being used, we should know about it, because it does fall under our ban, which we passed a number of years ago.
And again, how would people get that information to you?
Again, either by calling our department at 415-355-3700 or emailing us at environment@sfenvironment.org.
Okay, great. Let's go to our next caller, Elizabeth from Oakland. Welcome to the program.
Much for this conversation, and I want to follow on two of your callers, the woman from Sweden and the woman, I think Annie from Berkeley, may not have it fully identified herself, but I think she might be the director of Story of Stuff. So I have two questions. There are a couple great nonprofits. I'm a nonprofit worker that have a lot of information, and I'm curious if the city is connected to some of the nonprofits, particularly around environmental waste, of where you can bring your things to recycle. So that's one question, is are you connecting to nonprofits like the Story of Stuff in Berkeley? I have a feeling that was Annie Leonard from Berkeley calling, and Silicon Valley Environmental Council, where you can actually learn how to recycle your electronic waste. And my second question is, in Europe, there's a lot of more government, encouragement to recycle products for corporations to recycle their products from beginning to end. Do you have any connection with countries like that?
All right. Thanks so much, Elizabeth, for your call.
Great. Thank you. So, Elizabeth, yes, we do work a lot with the nonprofit sector, particularly through our Zero Waste program. We actually have a grant program where we support nonprofits that help with our diversion. So we just handed out about $200,000 in grants to a number of nonprofits that specifically work on dealing with different portions of our waste stream. So, yes, we do, but always are looking for additional suggestions of groups for us to connect with. And as it relates to I think you were referring to cradle to cradle and sort of thinking about how companies from beginning to end manufacture in a way that will really reduce their impact on the environment. And we work mostly with the Cradle to Cradle Institute that's here in San Francisco, where a number of governments in other countries have taken the lead at looking at cradle to cradle. So it's something that is new on the horizon, but something that San Francisco definitely supports.
And I think we have time for one more caller. Michelle from San Francisco. You get the last call, Michelle. Make it brief, though.
I live in a small building in San Francisco, and the property manager refuses to pay to have the composting bin picked up. He says that people are not going to comply, and he doesn't want to educate the residents. So my question is, what should I do? I don't want to get a fine because I want to compost.
Okay, thanks so much, Michelle, for your call. So what can Michelle do?
So on our website at sfenvironment.org, there's actually an anonymous form that you can fill out to give us information about the building, and we can follow up to see what we can do to try to get composting in your building.
Mm. Now, she lives in a small building, it sounds like, so how anonymous could she possibly be, right? What's going to happen? Is someone going to knock on the door and say, why aren't you composting?
What would happen is we would, one of our zero waste staff would call the property owner or the property manager and say, we have a mandatory composting and recycling law here in San Francisco. If you're seeking exemptions for a particular reason, we can talk about that. But otherwise, composting and recycling is required. So they would say, how can we help you get that service up and running?
Wouldn't necessarily be like there was a complaint made.
No.
Okay. All right. Just so Michelle knows. Okay. Great. Well, you know, there was an amazing outpouring of interest on this topic, Michelle, which was really great considering what we're up against in terms of the game tonight and
right.
All that stuff. So we're excited about that. And there's so much more to cover. You know, we didn't ever talk about, you know, the climate change, meaning sea level rise concerns that we have. We haven't talked about your initiatives around toxics and also environmental justice, how to make sure that environmental efforts are trying to correct some decisions of the past that have put certain parts of our city at more of a disadvantage than others. So I feel there's another show in here. So we're going to want to invite you back. I hope you'll come back.
I would love to come back. Thank you so much.
So thanks to Melanie Nutter of the San Francisco Department of the Environment. Our show was produced by our senior producer this evening, Susie Britton, and our engineer was Bob Summer. Thanks to you both. And if you're interested in signing up for podcasts and alerts, letting us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to hear other past shows, go to kalw.org/programs/city-visions. And join us in a couple of weeks. Next week will be preempted, so we can bring you the third of the presidential debates. So we'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll be covering Props 34 and 36. That's the one that seeks to repeal the death penalty, and Prop 36 that seeks to revise the three strikes law. So I'm Joseph Pace. For all of us here at City Visions, thanks, good night, and have a great week.